RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So this is from the UK Ofcom website, published 6th March 2023. Ofcom has today found Mark Stein. The Mark Stein program, which aired on GB News 21st April 2022, was in breach of our broadcasting rules. We have been consistently clear that, they go on to say, under our rules, broadcasters are free to transmit programs which may be considered controversial and challenging, or which question statistics and other evidence produced by governments or other official sources. It can be clearly in the public interest to do so. However, with this editorial freedom comes an obligation to ensure that when portraying factual matters, audiences are not materially misled. So that's from the Ofcom site. And this from Naomi Wolf's Substack. I flew to London for a June 11th hearing at the Royal Courts of Justice, a judicial review of UK media regulator Ofcom's sanctions against respected commentator Mark Stein. Ofcom had concluded that the Stein show on GB News, which I referred to just before, on which he had allowed me, Naomi Wolf, to present findings from the Pfizer papers had caused harm. Naomi Wolf is with me right now. Thank you for joining us. This sounds really, really interesting. What's the harm that they speak of there?
Well, that is a very good question, because I actually read on that podcast almost all of the painful Ofcom legal argument verbatim, which Ofcom's lawyers were forced, in the most humiliating display I've seen in my lifetime, to make that their case before the court. It was a judicial review, meaning that the judge was deciding if the Ofcom decision in 2023 had been decided correctly. And it was an important decision because Mark Stein got kicked off his show. GB News, in my view, totally threw him under the bus. GB News didn't even show up at the hearing. And Stein suffered a great deal, and he got up against medical wishes to fly across the Atlantic to be present for that hearing. He's very ill, I'm sorry to say.
And I'm sad to hear that. Mm.
Yeah, and what a brave guy. I mean, he doesn't stand to gain any damages. It is literally as a matter of principle and for the sake of free speech and the public interest and for the right of people in Britain to hear information that affects them. So what is the harm? The reason that's impossible to answer is that Ofcom, which is a government agency invested with power by Parliament, has been given a brief so wide and undefined that harm, this became clear in their skeleton argument, it's called harm is anything they say harm is. It's entirely Orwellian. So it doesn't have to be untrue. You know, they talk about misleading, but then when they got into the meat of their argument, they had to acknowledge that what I said was true and that something doesn't have to be untrue to cause harm. They weren't making the case that what I said was untrue. By now, the Pfizer papers reports that my team of 3,250 doctors and scientists have brought forth and that link to the primary documents, they've been presented to the Australian Parliament twice, to the British members of Parliament, to MEPs in Europe, to Senator Johnson's staff, to Congressman Massey's staff, to the Brazilian Parliament. The team is meeting with the government of Japan, and on and on and on. In other words, you know, Simon & Schuster is publishing the second volume of these in September. In other words, everyone but Ofcom knows that what we found and linked to is true. But what they were forced to say, something could be true and still be a conspiracy theory, which led the court to burst out in laughter to the point where the judge threatened to clear the court if people couldn't contain themselves. And Ofcom said, it's harmful. You wouldn't believe this. It's harmful what I said about the actual documented Pfizer documented harms of the vaccine. It's harmful for me to tell people about these risks and deaths and injuries because it could upset people who've already had the vaccine. And it could keep people from getting a booster, which is a surreal argument, because among the piece of evidence I brought forward on Mark Stein's show is that Pfizer knew a month after rollout that the vaccines didn't stop you from getting COVID and dying. They concluded there was failure of efficacy or vaccine failure. So it was a very tortured argument that was really ultimately nonsensical. And it's basically the state has the right to say that anything is harmful, including another show that was also bundled together with the one on which I appeared in this hearing, in which Stein was simply looking at government data about who got COVID and noting objectively that more people got COVID with the vaccine than without, which many, many studies have subsequently independently confirmed. So that's harm.
Wow. It sounds farcical. Totally. And in a, you know, prestigious court of law in the UK, what was the reaction to, you know, as these arguments were being laid out? Because, you know, you'd sit there thinking, am I in a parallel universe?
Yeah, it was so painful to me as someone who loves Britain and British culture and British history, which is really the history of the idea of freedom and free speech and due process of law. It was painful for me to see what's happened to Britain. I'm sitting in that court. It was a packed court, and it was packed because there are, you know, many thousands of vaccine injured or bereaved people in Britain, dozens of which had come into the court. I mean, it was so crowded that Mark Stein and I actually were literally pushed up against opposing counsel physically, like everyone was jammed together.
In your face, yeah.
Yeah. And it was also very painful because Stein was not allowed to speak and I was not allowed to speak. And I hadn't even been notified by the court that I could submit a statement. So there was this dramatic moment halfway through when it became clear that no one had submitted my statement, which I'd written. I'm quite proud of it. It's on my Substack. And I had to verbally sit there half the day listening to myself being defamed and defamed and defamed and not allowed to defend myself, which was what happened in 2023 and to the present to both of us, Stein and myself. Ofcom, with its giant government megaphone, got to say she's a crazy conspiracy theorist, he's irresponsible and spreading harm. And they got to replicate this in news outlets, not just in Britain, but probably in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and all over the, you know, British Commonwealth. And Stein and I couldn't even, who are they, right? What faceless bureaucrats are deciding that I, with my, you know, decades of accolades and publications, am a crazy conspiracy theorist, and I don't even know who these people are. I don't have the right to respond to them. So anyway, I had to sit through the morning of that. And then I had to verbally request the judge, who was seemed very thoughtful and engaged and smart, but who knows what the decision will be. I had to ask her if I could submit my statement, and she agreed. She read it over lunch. And then the questioning after lunch was much more, which was now time for Ofcom, was much more, I don't want to say confrontational to Ofcom, but much more drilled down by the judge with questions like, how can something be harmful if it's true? So but nonetheless, what was painful, in addition to being silenced, was there were no press. Peter McIlvenna covered it, independent media, but also the Press Association, which is like a wire, right? But no Guardian, no BBC. This is one of the most impactful free speech cases, you know, in British history since the major free speech cases in the early 20th century, like Lady Chatterley's Lover, The Well of Loneliness. And the press wasn't covering the press, you know, and it was like two non-British people. I believe Stein is Canadian, I'm American, standing up for free speech in Britain, because I understand why. I tried to pitch to my former editors at The Guardian a story, an op-ed about this incredibly historic day. And they were like, oh, it's not really for us, Naomi. I'm amazed they even responded to me because I've been so unpersoned. But how could The Guardian, for whom I've written for four decades, not cover this story? Because they took the money. Because they took the money to lie. They took the money to injure people. They, too, are in the docket, right? They, too, sooner or later, if there's justice, there are going to be defendants for killing people through real harm, which is misinformation, downplaying the risks, refusing to cover the risks of these injections. But it was a painful day.
Wow. It sounds like they're sort of fixated on this conspiracy theorist thing, just going back to what you said before. You know, it can be true, but if it's said by someone who's perceived as a conspiracy theorist, it can't be anything.
I don't mean to be like focused on my own bio, but I'm a tough nut for them to crack, the establishment, because I am the establishment, right? Yale, Rhodes Scholar, Oxford, Oxford DPhil, professor, 9 bestsellers, written for every major news outlet, appeared on every news show, advised a president, advised a vice president. I was the legacy media until I got kicked out for reporting on harms to women's menstrual cycles, which yet another major study recently confirmed. So what are they going to do? They can't say I'm a drug addict. They can't say I'm a, Wiccan devil worshiper. I mean, all they can say is, no, seriously, that I'm a problem,
No, I get it.
All they can say is that I'm a conspiracy theorist. Good luck with that. My platform is bigger now than it was before they kicked me out of the magical circle of elitism.
But even to think that has any impact anymore,
I hope not. I hope not. But it does have some impact in the sense that I can't talk to my audiences in the UK. I can't. And it's very threatening, actually. The same week, a lot of threatening things happened. The same week I appeared in court. As I was in court, someone who's been tasked with stalking me, Matthew Sweet, a BBC commentator whose show sort of, stage a gotcha about my book Outrages, in 2019, which was interestingly about how the British states seized power and stripped people of their liberties through exploiting epidemics. And it was about the early anti-vaccine movement in the wake of cholera and typhus epidemics. But in any event, he's been, I guess, tasked with harassing me. He's been doing it like day and night with barely an exaggeration since 2019. And he physically walked past the courtroom, when I was there, which that may not seem that threatening, but I had to travel without my husband, who's also my bodyguard. And I don't think it was a physical threat, but it was stalkery.
It's freaky. Freaky.
It's freaky. Yeah. And also a lot of other things happened that week. This woman, the formerly, legendary Naomi Klein, who believes I'm her doppelganger, and wrote a whole book trying to discredit me. I found the money flow of pharma in the millions to her family. Her book got an award from that week, right? Again, a book discrediting me from a British awards prize, a literary prize that had never given the prize to nonfiction before. It was a fiction prize. And then when I got home, my publisher contacted me and said that I had to cut an interview out of a book I wrote in 2012 because the guy I interviewed has been charged with something, in 2024, 12 years later, whatever. And that if I didn't do it, I would be accused of contempt of court and, dragged into some sort of lawfare that seems pretty arcane to me because I'm not a British citizen, but it's a lot of like hands kind of reaching around to.
Yeah. And the timing's interesting, right? And let's not forget that BBC, the BBC person you talked about, another government operation, right?
Yeah. Well, it's so scary because it's so clear that, as my husband pointed out, who's from the intel community most of his career, Canada, Britain, probably Australia, right? They coordinate, messaging.
And us, yeah.
And yeah, so it's scary because it means that, just as we see, independent media, independent voices are fighting a very outnumbered fight, and they can bully you and lawfare you, well, as they did with Mark Stein, you know, to death, but to the end. I mean, to silence. I mean, they've effectively silenced my voice and Mark Stein's in Britain.
You know. So really, to boil it down, there's been a huge crime against humanity. The people who were involved in that at whatever level, they know that. And now the job is to make sure the dike doesn't crack and everything pour out. Is that really what they're trying to do?
Yeah, clearly. It's really not even about me or Mark Stein. We're just in the way of the truth getting, you know, we're in the way of the cover-up, essentially. Exactly. You know, they killed a lot of people, and either they face consequences or, you know, they discredit me and Mark Stein, and, you know, they put Steve Bannon in prison today.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. I think it's just notable that, you know, Bannon, I guess, arguably or ostensibly is going to prison because he resisted a subpoena. And I'll just note, as a former political consultant to a vice president and to a presidential campaign, all the Clinton team depended on executive privilege, right? Without executive privilege, you can't lead a country. But I feel, you know, Bannon was the person who got this project going. You know, Bannon's the person who said on air when I was talking to him, oh, of course, you're going to issue reports based on these Pfizer documents that are coming out. And it hadn't occurred to me. I didn't know how to do it. Mm. But of course, I said, sure. Figure out how to do it. Right. But I don't know to what extent that's part of his actually being incarcerated, but
it'd be part of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's my intuition. I guess what I'm trying to say to your question is there's a mop-up action going on as people become aware that this was a murderous injection. I do want to say one more thing. I promise I'll pause. Interestingly, the Ofcom lawyers were very obsessed with the fact that I had said that it's a bioweapon, even though I just interviewed Francis Boyle, who wrote the 1992 legislation banning bioweapons, the treaty banning bioweapons, and he said it's a bioweapon. So that's just objectively, the guy who wrote the treaty said it's a bioweapon, right? And they were also very preoccupied with the fact that I had said it was mass murder. And I, you know, looked up the Britannica definition of mass murder, and it's just literally, I'm not being rhetorical, it's literally mass murder. 1,225 people died in 3 months, half of the serious adverse events and three of the reports were within 48 hours, including deaths. And mass murder is when you have multiple deaths at specific locations. So literally textbook. But they're very preoccupied with that. And then you realize what, you know, your first question is, what is harm? To who is being harmed? The government officials who did this are facing harm, you know, from what I'm saying on Mark Stein's show. Mm-hmm. So they're very concerned that I said they committed a crime.
That response to bioweapon, that's a bit of a tell, isn't it?
I think both of these reactions are significant because they kind of were only nominally worried about the viewers. They're really worried about the bioweapon and the mass murder.
Mm. I want to ask you about the recent debate in the state of US politics briefly, because I know we're always tight for time. Just maybe quickly in a few points, if you could just tell our audience the documents and the material that you pulled together from that moment on Steve Bannon. I actually heard that, so I know the moment you're talking about. Mm. What has it got? I know it's, you know, incredibly detailed, and you mentioned the number of people involved. It sounds like a bit of a sledgehammer blow when you turn up with that.
Yeah. Well, I see why, you know, whole governments are trying to, it's so interesting. Some governments are asking our volunteers to present to them, and other governments are trying to bury what we found. And I think that kind of says it all. It is a sledgehammer blow. I mean, we self-published the first 50 reports, and that was a top 10 Amazon bestseller. And now Simon & Schuster, is publishing the second 50, which are even more shocking, right? And it's called the Pfizer Papers. And everyone who cares about the truth coming out really needs to pre-order, because in the world of publishing, that makes a big difference if people pre-order. But you can pre-order now on Amazon. It's coming out in September. But you're absolutely right. A physical book that you can send to the library, you know, that's at the Library of Congress, that you can send to your representative, hand to your doctor, send to your hospital administrator, and it's 400 pages long. And it links to the original documents, right? It's irrefutable. No one, like everyone listening, if they're on kind of our side of the consciousness spectrum, has had those conversations in which they're trying to say to their loved ones, look at this piece of primary evidence about these dangers. And their loved ones are like, you're not a doctor. Well, these people are doctors and they're scientists and, you know, it overwhelmingly credentialed. I mean, an appendix with their credentials was one of the things I submitted to the judge that led to, I think, the shift in tone. I don't want to get ahead of the decision, but it was a very respectful, you know, response in the second half of the...
Just saying that you were lucky to get that in. You were lucky to get that in time.
Yeah, I was lucky. But this book, you know, is a... I mean, it's like the real Anthony Fauci, in a sense. You know, his reputation was unassailable before that book came out. And then it's like, huh, people took a second look. Well, when our book is in your hands, you know, it's not a matter of opinion. It's not even my opinion. It's not my work. That's why calling me a conspiracy theorist isn't really going to work when this book comes out, because it's not my work. It's not my opinion. You know, it's these 3,250 experts. So yes, it is a knockout blow.
All right. I want to get some thoughts from you on what we saw, almost a week ago, that debate. And I want to mention a couple of comments that Mike Benz has said on X in the last day or so. He's been on this program a few times. And people will know his background if they recognize the name. And he made the point that while the media and political operatives, et cetera, Democrats are talking publicly about a change out or Biden not being fit to carry on, he's saying that there's been no sort of like, you know, mass signed letter from notable members of the intelligence community, like there was over the Hunter Biden laptop, with the 51 members, I guess you call them, of the intelligence community that they did back then, which you would expect if there was a sort of like a growing move that was going to get somewhere to lose him as a candidate. And he thinks that's interesting. He also mentions Mike Donilon, who I think is one of the top guys at BlackRock, and his brother. I didn't get the first name of his brother. I think the most senior Biden advisor, and kind of speculating on the control they might have of that administration through the president. So in saying that, you might have a comment to make on that, but also your reaction to, I'm sure you've seen the clips at minimum or the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like totally mind-blowing, actually. I thought, yeah. I've never seen anything like it before. So feel free to opine on those.
Well, I guess I feel kind of frustrated that so many people in America are taken aback, because we've known for almost since he was elected that Biden was suffering from dementia and that it was getting worse and worse and worse. And only people, I'm not being critical of you, I don't know, you know, every information stream is very mediated, but if people were able to see, you know, straight clips of Biden performing, which maybe, you know, didn't reach your shores, very possible.
No, we've seen them. Yeah. We've seen
them. Oh, right.
Over the years.
It's like no surprise. And so I'm sort of frustrated at all the liberals I know, all the Democrats are like, oh my gosh, you know, where were you? You know, why were you willing to get your clips from CNN? Why didn't you just turn on C-SPAN and see what he was actually saying? Same thing with President Trump. You know, I thought President Trump was a lunatic before I ever saw him actually in person give a speech. And he makes a lot of sense and is taken out of context. I'm not endorsing him, but we should all know better than to get our news about our presidents or our presidential candidates only through a filter. Look, I think there's a fight at the top levels of the White House. That's what it seems to mean. I think there's a faction, probably China, that wants a puppet who can't function running the country or whatever as a figurehead, partly for what my husband has explained to me is called the century of humiliation, which is China feels that they had a century of humiliation at the hands of the West in the 19th century, opium wars and so on. And so now they're inflicting a century of humiliation on us. And when he said that, it really, a lot of things kind of fell into place because so much of what we're seeing in the West, including Western Europe, is about humiliation, symbolic humiliation, and humiliation that's not really Western, like.
Yeah, their brand.
Their
brand of humiliation.
Exactly. Like, let's put the men in dresses. You know, it's like this weird sort of non-Western humiliation. And so they want him to stay. And the American elite political class on the left, the DNC, the donors, want to get rid of him. And so they're fighting it out. And I think Jill Biden is emerging as a very interesting figure, kind of an Edith Wilson figure, because she's clearly enjoying herself and doesn't,
You can tell. You can tell it.
Right?
She transmits that. Yeah.
Yeah. And she would rather torture her poor demented husband by trotting him out in these very inappropriate settings, then take him home and look after him and get him into hospice care or whatever he needs, you know? So that's the fight that I see. And it's very suspicious that after the debate, there was this very orchestrated, whenever you see a lot of repetition of a soundbite, you know, it's
been sent down from, yeah,
it's like panic, 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 panic. That was the soundbite, right? So those are the people who want to switch out Biden with probably Gavin Newsom or Michelle Obama or Mrs. Clinton.
Right. Okay. And his finger on or near the nuclear button, has that got you concerned? Because
I mean, I've been concerned since 2022. You know, this is not a new source of concern to me. What is really more important to ask is who's running the United States. You're trying to figure that out too. I think the Donilon brothers were involved as far back as the Gore campaign. I remember, that.
Clinton, at least one of them, I think I read.
Yeah. Mike Donilon, right. But who is running the United States?
He controls $10 trillion.
Wow.
And that's a serious amount of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, according to Mike Benz. Well, we live in interesting times. I think that's what the Chinese say, don't they? Thank you for coming on again. We appreciate that. Really interesting. And before you go, how long is this going to take, this judicial review and the judge's findings? Do you have any idea?
Okay. They don't tell us. I'll ask the producer of Mark Stein again. I've asked, I've checked in, but it's such an opaque system. We have no way to know. There's no expectation. It could drag out. I really don't know. I'll tell you as soon as I know. Believe me, you'll be among the first to get the call.
And there'll be a change of government in the UK in that time too.
Interesting.
This week, probably. Okay. Naomi Wolf, thanks for coming back on Reality Check Radio, and look forward to our next chat whenever. Okay.
Thank you.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.